me that gavel.
Okay. And the first thing is approval of the minutes, and Representative Abler moves the minutes of April 21st. Where is he? There he is. Any discussion of the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, so we've adopted the minutes. And what we're going to do today is go through a proposed Omnibus Health and Human Service Supplemental Bill. I'm going to give a brief introduction, and then we're going to have John Walls walk through the spreadsheet. And then after that, the research staff will go through the written part so you can sort of understand it. And we will have hearings tomorrow, and there's at least 60 people signed up. And and when we get done with that, then we'll be going to taking up the bill. And I want to, Representative Abler.
Is there a time certain for the markup time? Is it like 6, or is it just whenever?
Well, you know, we also have a session tomorrow, so that's the problem that we've got.
All right. So it's not a time. I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, it's not a time.
Okay, thank
you. Okay, let me just give a brief introduction. We would like, and I know this is short notice, and there are some things that I don't control around here, but we would like amendments in by noon tomorrow. And then we can look at that, and we'll be discussing those that tomorrow evening, then when the bill comes up. Over the last 3 years, the Health and Human Services budget has taken a disproportionate share of cuts relative to the state budget. Last year, we got 70% of the cuts. This year, our target is appropriate, and the leadership is given us a final target of about 154, was that what they said? But there'll be some slight changes in that. And that basically, as I said, the I think the speaker was very generous with this committee in that we got credit for the $408 million that we hope we will get. And also, there was a $92 million clawback, which we got credit for. There is a problem, however, with the 408, and Congress may not pass that till this fall, and it's going to make this a very unusual budget process then if we include that in there. I suppose if that does not get included in the federal bill, we'd have to have a special session to come back and fix it up. Total cuts to Health and Human Service in 2010-2011, including line item vetoes and unallotments, was $1.3 billion. This year, as I said, we have already made some cuts due to the GAMC bill, but we're sort of in the ballpark as a percent of the cuts going as a percent of our what our budget is of the state budget. The bill that we're proposing here also reduces the deficit in the next biennium by a total of over $1 billion. And that is in part due to tail savings from the enacted GAMC bill. The House DFL proposal strongly protects nursing homes and people with disabilities. We are reducing rates for long-term care by 1% on a one-time basis, and then it goes away in, I'm not sure what the year is. It's a one-year cut. The governor had proposed a 2.5% permanent cut. We have chosen not to do what the governor wanted to do, which was to eliminate general assistance. That's the cash help, $203 to basically individuals that cannot work. nor did we support the governor's penalties against low-income families who receive SSI disability. One of the reasons, and I think the department now agrees, that that's probably illegal if it's the child that's disabled. It would still be legal if it was the adult, but basically people that are on SSI are there because they've been determined to have severe disabilities. We do have a lot of chemical and mental health grant cuts, but we're trying not to make them permanent, so those are one time. We are cutting some hospitals by 7%, but we're protecting primary care providers, rural hospitals, which did not benefit from the new GAMC CCDS option. And we'll be discussing all these in pretty much in detail. This bill assumes that we will start early MA expansion. Some of you may remember that 11 states can start MA expansion early. Minnesota is one of those. The department doesn't think they can get the work done until January 2011. But at that time, the intent of the bill we're offering is to do that early expansion as soon as possible. Let's see. The early MA has a general fund cost of $47 million in 2011, and that's on top of the $154 million in cuts, so we're actually going to make an additional $47 million cuts in this budget for 2011. And as I discussed last week, we are going to run a rather large deficit in the health care access fund. And my understanding, and Mr. Walls can explain it better than I can, that the picture will change in January of next year because the out biennium will be a lot better for Health and Human Services than the current out biennium. The deficit, however, in the healthcare access fund at the end of the 2013 biennium is $409 million, which is exactly what it would be under current law. And we feel that we can address the structural deficit in the healthcare access fund when we get back here next year in January. One of the major changes we did some health care reform that's in this bill, and I intend to reconstitute the governor's health care transformation task force that we had in 2007, which led to the significant health care reform that's gotten us a lot of national attention. It is my intent to basically set it up the same way. And in other words, I'm giving the governor the opportunity if he wants to participate, and I know he is very seriously interested in accountable care organizations, which we talked about last week. Let's see. We do have a surcharge on HMOs that raises $60 million. Is that federal money? $60 million of federal money coming into our budget, and basically we charge them, and the money is recycled back to them. Plus, we get to keep the federal match. That surcharge, you can argue, it's very similar to the one supported by Governor Pawlenty and a number of Republican people in leadership right now voted for a very similar thing, I think 2003. We are not going to do the governor's new cuts to state-operated services. The bill does include agency cuts to administration, the same as the governor recommended. And I think I can quit with that. And Mr. Walls, if you want to start with the spreadsheet, I think you all have a copy of that. So, Mr. Walls.
Mr. Chair, everyone should have a copy of the spreadsheet in front of them. I'll start on the first page, and if I start going too fast, feel free to slow me down. On line 3 of the spreadsheet, in the House column under fiscal year 10 and 11, you'll see a negative number of $154,689,000. This is the target remaining for the committee for fiscal 10 and 11 that nets out all of those other savings that you talked about. It anticipates the $408 million from the federal government for the increased federal Medicaid participation for an additional 6 months. It also includes savings to the general fund that were previously realized from the passage of the GAMC bill. Mr. Chair, I'll then just start skipping down to the individual initiatives. The top of the page is generally just totals of initiatives throughout the bill. On line 77, the governor had proposed some adult mental health budget reductions. The House picks up those reductions, and if you turn to page 2, you'll see several shaded lines. There's a few more that are later in the spreadsheet. These are pieces of those initiatives that the governor had proposed, and we are picking up generally those initiatives in total, but we show zeros on the House side, and that is because those savings were already used in the passage of the GAMC bill. So after the first adult mental health reduction, there were some chemical dependency funding reductions, which the House also accepted and included in the bill. In addition to that, on line 95, some additional children's mental health budget reductions. The only piece that remained of that one was reducing child mental health case management grants on line 98. On line 101, there were some additional mental health grant reductions. Most of these are done on a one-time basis. These were not proposed by the governor. You can see them on lines 104 through 111. The capacity school-based mental health services grants and the adult mental health integrated mental health fund reductions are permanent. The rest of those are one-time. On line 115, there was the governor suggested capturing a balance in the state-operated services laundry account, and the House scoops up that balance as well. On line 119, the governor proposed a state-operated services reduction that would include closure of one state hospital facility and included some layoffs, and the House did not at this time include that proposal. On line 126, the conversion of general assistance was not included in the House budget, nor was the elimination of MSA special needs. Moving on to page 3, the governor's proposal for counting SSI income for MFIP and child care was not included in the House budget, but below that on line 152, the House does have some additional reductions to the MFIP program, which includes counting some of the subsidized housing as an offset to income, changing the grant the vehicle asset limit, decreasing the exit level from 115 to 100% of poverty, and the associated savings are listed on those lines. On line 169, basic sliding fee, that was not part of this committee's purview, so that's not included at this time. On line 175, the House does refinance $28 million in emergency TANF that was additional unanticipated money coming in from the federal government. On line 183, just details some of the TANF refinancing that's done. Most of this is to the additional items listed on line 152. Going down to 198, there are two proposals from the governor that are not under the purview of this committee that relate to child care, so those are not included in the bill. The next piece that is included in the House bill is on line 230, eliminate or reduce selected grants. The governor on line 235 had suggested reducing supported work grants by $1.3 million in fiscal 11. The House makes a $4 million reduction. And in addition to that, the House also included $9.9 million in ongoing cuts to county children's services grants. This was a provision that was originally included for savings in the GAMC bill but was dropped along the way. Mr. Chair, going down to line 240, the governor had included some technical rider corrections, two of which included some savings for support services grants and children and economic assistance grants. Those are included. On line 249, reducing some children's special revenue grant balances. Those were included under both the governor's and the House proposal. Under continuing care provider rate reductions, the governor included a 2.5% permanent cut. I believe the House cut is 1%, and it is for 1 year only, and that would be for fiscal 2011. Mr. Chair, moving on to page 5, there are a couple of small spending items that were included, $100,000 in 2011 to provide one additional year funding for Region 10 quality assurance. In line 286, an adjustment for the Wilmer ICFMR. This is also just a one-year rate adjustment for fiscal 2011. I believe that was a bill that we heard in committee. On line 291 is a House proposal to increase TEFRA fees to be at cost above 556% of poverty, and you see about a $500,000 savings in 2011 for that proposal. We included language for the PACE bill. That was a revenue neutral position, so the costs and revenue are net zero on line 297. On line 308 was a proposal for a bill we heard to create an Office of the Health Inspector General. The associated costs of $192,000 for 2011 are listed on line 308. Then come some proposals for savings. The first is on line 317, and this takes any Medicaid payments where the Medicare rate is lower and reduces the MA rate to be equal to the Medicare rate. That saves $5 million in 2011 and about $2.3 million in 12 and 13. On line 325 is a proposal that was included in last year's bill but did not make it through conference committee, and that was to, I believe it's to try to have HMOs reduce unnecessary ER visits. It realizes about a $300,000 savings in 11 and increasing savings in 12 and 13. On line 333, there's an MAEPD premium increase. Those premiums would raise $500,000 in 11 and about $1 million a year going forward. On line 340, there was an item included in the governor's budget. The governor had proposed setting aside some health care access fund to help set up Section 125 plans. The money had gone largely unused, and so this provision cancels that back to the health care access fund. On line 346 was a proposal to allow volunteer firefighters to buy into Minnesota Care at full cost. The $68,000 in 2011 represents the system change costs for being able to take care of the computer and printing necessary to allow the firefighters to buy into the program. On line 355 is $200,000 a year to reinstitute the Healthcare Transformation Task Force. On line 361 is the cost for changes to allow people on Minnesota Care to buy supplemental hospital coverage. On line 371 was the $250,000 for the department to conduct a study of the costs or savings if the state were to move to a single-payer model of health care. On line 377 were some pharmacy rate adjustments. I think this was House File 3066, which was amended, and these are the costs of providing slight rate adjustments for pharmacies. On line 385 was requiring private insurers to increase coverage for private duty nursing, and what's displayed are the savings to the state plan. On line 390 required coverage for chemotherapy. I believe this was the provision would require chemotherapy coverage, and there would be a slight cost to state the CGIP plan, and those costs are listed on line 394. On line 398 are the savings for birthing center licensing, a bill we heard in this committee. On line 403 is a proposal to modify coverage for rehabilitative services. The governor had proposed eliminating these services. While the House reduces them, it does not eliminate them, and those are the savings of the reductions. On line 416, this is a savings from a proposal to capture federal money for health care home and coordinated care payments made. This is part of the federal health care reform bill in which the federal government will pay 90% of the coordinated care costs, and that's the resulting savings. On line 422 is the cost of the early entry for early entry MA for adults without kids to 75% of poverty. This is a proposal that will be funded out of the Health Care Access Fund. The way the proposal, or at least the overall bill, is set up now, there are some transfers made from the Health Care Act or from the General Fund to the Health Care Access Fund. Those are on line 430. And then it also recoups the savings from the elimination of the current GAMC program. And the end result is that the Health Care Access Fund balance at the end of 2013 will be the same as they are in current law. On line 442, critical access dental modifications. This was another proposal we heard in committee, and it adds back some of the services that were reduced in previous years, and there is some cost associated with adding back some of those services. On line 456, this is a 3% reduction to specialists or non-primary care, saves $9 million in fiscal 2011. An HMO rate reduction and a 7% fee-for-service increase nets a $3.9 million savings. That's on line 465. On 474 is the HMO offset and rate increases. This is the HMO surcharge listed on line 482. Three lines above that are the rate increases, which are to essentially, in aggregate, keep the HMOs whole for the cost of the surcharges, but because it brings in federal money, there's a savings realized to the state. Mr. Chair, continuing on to page 8, there's a savings from requiring autism spectrum disorder coverage, and that savings would be in the MA elderly and disabled program on line 489, saves $367,000 in fiscal 2011. On line 498, there's a GAMC CCO restructure. This takes $20 million from the coordinated care pool in the recently passed GAMC proposal and reallocates it. It does so by giving hospitals outside the seven county metro area a 1 year 7.15% rate increase, and that costs about $15 million. In addition to that, there are some there's $5 million under the Department of Health that is spent to give grants on a one-time basis to FQHCs and community clinics. On line 506, the governor had proposed to limit temporary disabilities waiver growth limits. The House also included that proposal, as well as separating elderly waiver mix caps from nursing facility non-operating rate increases. Was a savings of in 2012 and 13 of $2 million. The House also includes that proposal. The HIV funding shift was included in the GAMC bill. The increase of the managed care withhold was included in the House bill. There are slightly different numbers on line 529, and I believe that's due to the interaction with early entry MA, which is not included in the governor's bill. Moving to top of page 9, there's an inpatient hospital rate reduction. The House, the governor's rate is 3% for fiscal 2011, 12, and 13. The House rate reduction is 7% in 2011, 12, and 13, but for 2011, it excludes hospitals outside the 7-county metro area. Mr. Chair, then going down through rest of page 9, there were some proposals included by the governor which were not picked up by the House, which includes eliminating adult therapy, Merck PMAP carve-out reduction, critical access dental reductions, eliminating Greater Minnesota Hospital DRG rate add-ons, reducing Minnesota Care for eligibility for adults without children, and technical corrections to some CDMI and Minsho riders. Continuing on to page 10, we did not eliminate the reductions in MinCare premiums on line 52 that the governor had proposed. The House uses different language for state COBRA subsidy carry forward, and there's a small $1.7 million associated savings with that. On line 609, the governor proposed delaying inpatient hospital rebasing. The House did not include that proposal. And on line 615 are the included reductions to DHS central operating staff. Going on to page 11, there and continuing on to, well, through the bottom of page 11, the governor had included the list of his unallotments and was requesting that they be picked up on a permanent basis. None of those unallotments are carried forward into the House proposal, which brings us to page 12 and the Department of Health. Much of the Department of Health falls under the purview of the Committee of Housing and Health. However, there are some small items included in this bill. On line 736, there's a $74,000 reduction from the general fund. It's continuing an unallotment, a one-time reduction to the area of policy, quality, and compliance. On line 748, the House picks up a $1.7 million savings for a three-month delay in rural hospital improvement grants. On line 764 is the total for 3% operating reductions to policy, quality, and compliance, which is under the purview of this committee. On line 780 are the associated costs and savings for the federal e-health compliance initiative. On line 792, there was a birth record surcharge and a birth defects information system. $2.5 million is raised through a surcharge. This is revenue to the general fund, and there's a $500,000 annual expenditure to set up a birth defects information system. On line 801, there's $100,000 for a one-year grant to the Memory Care Clinic, I believe in central Minnesota. On line 808, is a small administrative cost in relation to the birthing center licensing bill. On line 814, there's an advisory group on administrative expenses. I believe that has to do with looking into the administrative expenses of HMOs. Okay.
Health plans.
On line 821, there's a $79,000 expenditure for a bill to do some further monitoring and testing of lead levels in blood. On line 828, there is an addition to the statewide health improvement program in the next biennium, $8.5 million a year from the Healthcare Access Fund in 2012 and 2013. On line 835, there is a study for a private health insurance autism coverage, $50,000 to the Department of Health. And on line 842 are the two aforementioned grants to FQHCs and community care clinics that were a result of a $20 million reduction in the coordinated care pool in current law GAMC. Mr. Chair, that completes the walk through the spreadsheet.
Okay. I realize that's a lot of information, and most of you are probably starting to glaze over, but John will be back for our committee tomorrow, and if you have any questions right now, go ahead and fire away. Representative Abler.
Just one for now. On the we reduced MFIP a little bit in terms of the 110 to 105 or 115 to 110. We can't change Medicaid stuff. We can change MFIP. Is that right? Under the MOE thing?
Mr. Walls.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, the provision in federal law that deals with not reducing eligibility for federal Medicaid participation has to do with Medicaid only and not MFIP programs or TANF-funded programs.
Right. Thank you.
Any others? Okay, if we could then move to the research staff to, I don't know who's going to lead off, but to sort of go through some of the language in the bill.
Mr. Chair, I'll discuss Article 1. It's a fairly short article. It has six sections, and it has to do with DHS licensing. The article amends statutes so that an individual who's been disqualified from employment has the right to have a fair hearing on the underlying disqualification. This is based on a Minnesota Court of Appeals case that was decided on February 23rd of this year. So the amendments to these six sections of statute are made to bring the statutes into compliance with the court order.
Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Why are we doing that in a finance bill?
That's I think there was a cost at one time. But Representative Abler has talked to me today, and there is a licensing bill out someplace that this would be germane to, and so he's going to essentially mend that onto that bill, and then we can take it out of this one. Because, you know, it's just a court order ordered to do it. There's not much to debate there.
And, Mr. Chair, that's the end of Article 1.
Okay, Article 2.
Mr. Chair, Article 2 is the article dealing with DHS healthcare programs. Section 1 makes the transfers from the general fund to the Healthcare Access Fund for the MA early expansion. Section 2 amends the definition in the Health Records Act to include affiliates of providers that are participating in the coordinated care delivery system set up under the GMC bill. Section 3 requires the commissioner to review all studies done and requested in fiscal years 2000 to 2010 and to report for each item the appropriation and date of completion and to make recommendations as to which studies are duplicative, unnecessary, or obsolete. And this is to be repeated every five fiscal years. Section 4 is an increase in the HMO surcharge to 2.5% of premium revenues It also requires county-based purchasing plans to pay this surcharge, and it exempts an HMO that reports a certain level of risk-based capital. Section 5 deals with inpatient hospital payments. It reduces fee-for-service payments by 7%, but excludes hospitals located outside of the 7-county metro area for 1 year, and then beginning in fiscal 12, it applies the 7% reduction to these rural hospitals. The provision also increases payments for these rural hospitals by 7.15% for fiscal year 11. Section 6 allows the commissioner to purchase medical supplies through competitive bidding and negotiation. Section 7 and 8 are the MA early expansion provisions for adults without children, and it sets an income limit at 75% of the federal poverty guidelines. Sections 9, 10, and 11 deal with the various therapy services. They eliminate coverage for specialized maintenance therapy and reduce the service thresholds for each of the services. Section 12 limits payment for chiropractic services to one annual evaluation and 12 visits per year. Section 13 modifies dental coverage for non-pregnant adults, and this section is basically reinstating some of the coverage for this group that was eliminated last year. Section 14 deals with prescription drug payment rates. It increases the pharmacy dispensing fee for sole community pharmacies. It also sort of does, it sort of fixes the AWP, or average wholesale price payment rate, to reflect the results of a national out-of-court settlement. So it raises the AWP payment rate, and it also expresses the payment in terms of the wholesale acquisition cost. Section 15 provides that MA covers oral language interpreter services only if the interpreter is listed in the registry or on a roster established by the Commissioner of Health. Section 16 allows the Commissioner to set payment rates for certain categories of medical supplies at levels that are below the Medicare payment rate. Section 17 deals with provides MA coverage for services provided in a licensed sports center by a licensed professional, sets payment rates for facility services provided by the birth center, sets payment rates for professional services provided by a licensed traditional midwife, and directs the commissioner to apply for any necessary federal waivers. Section 18 deals with co-payments, reduces the MA co-payment for non-emergency visits to a hospital-based emergency room from $6 to $3.50. It also increases the enrollee per month maximum for prescription drug co-payments from $7 to $12. Section 19 is a conforming change to the previous section. Section 20 is a DHS technical clarification to the GMC provisions. Section 21 is a conforming change related to the elimination of coverage for specialized maintenance therapy. Section 22 is language from the House bill from last year directing the commissioner to establish a payment reform demonstration project to reduce hospitalization, ER use of high-cost medicine and specialty services, and use of long-term care services. Section 23 is an intensive care management program. Directs the commissioner to provide intensive care management for enrollees determined to be in the top 5% of all MA enrollees on average costs. Section 24 is some language suggested by DHS related to the local share, so it's federal compliance language. Section 25 increases managed care and county-based purchasing payments under MA and under Minnesota Care for families and children by 2%. Section 26 is a 1% reduction to payment rates for MA, GMC, and Minnesota Care managed care plans. Section 27 and 28 are sort of technical clarification related to the GAMC bill that was passed. Section 29 provides that, or clarifies that the payment rate reduction for physician and professional services does not apply to physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech pathology. It also reduces payments for physician and professional services that are not tied to primary care by 3%. And it also increases payment rates by 15% for clinics owned by a nonprofit HMO that meet other criteria. Section 30 modifies the criteria the commissioner uses to determine which dentists and dental clinics get reimbursed as critical access dental providers. Okay. Section 31 specifies the criteria under which the commissioner can review and not designate a dentist or clinic as a critical access provider, or can disenroll a clinic or individual dentists.
Mr. Chan, if I could just interrupt for a minute. We have some guests in the audience who are visiting the state of Minnesota. They're from Germany, and included is the Honorable Stefan Kapferer, who is the Deputy Secretary of Health in the Germany's Federal Ministry of Health, and we also have Ines Krug, who is the from the Federal Ministry of Economics and Technology, and some of you may know, if they could wave at us, wherever they are, that there's an exchange program between the University of Minnesota and the federal government in Germany with healthcare, and I was fortunate enough last September to go to Germany to see how their healthcare system works, and they're over here to try to understand how ours work, and if they find out, they could tell me. So thank you for being here. Thank you. Mr. Chun, okay. Again.
Mr. Chair, Section 32 basically classifies PT, OT, and speech-language pathology services as basic care services. Section 33 provides that fee-for-service payments for physician and professional services and basic care services should not exceed the applicable Medicare payment rate. Section 34 provides a 7% increase for physician and professional services and basic care services. Section 35 makes some technical changes related to the GMC bill. It also specifies that for the period April 1st of 2010 through May 31st, that the services provided under the modified program are actually those under the old or the existing GMC program. Section 36 is a financial management language for Minnesota Care. It eliminates the ability for the commissioner to reduce premium subsidies and make other changes related to families and children on Minnesota Care. It also provides that the financial management measures that can be applied to adults without children shall not be implemented before July 1st of 2014. And then if these measures are not sufficient to ensure that the Minnesota Care or the Healthcare Access Fund remains in balance, the commissioners to make recommendations to legislative chairs and the Legislative Commission on Healthcare Access. Section 37 is a cross-reference. Section 38 requires the commissioner to offer all Minnesota Care applicants the opportunity to purchase at full cost supplemental hospital coverage. Section 39 makes changes to Minnesota Care copayments similar to those for medical assistance. Section 40 requires the Commissioner of Human Services to develop and include with the application for Minnesota Care disclosure statement about the $10,000 annual inpatient hospital limit. Section 41 allows volunteer firefighters and volunteer ambulance attendants to enroll in Minnesota Care and pay premiums equal to the average expected capitation rate. Section 42 reduces Minnesota Care payment rates for physician and professional services by 3%. Section 43 is a GAMC technical clarification. Section 44 is a conforming change related to Minnesota Care supplemental hospital coverage. Section 45 allows the commissioner to withhold an additional 3% of Minnesota Care managed care payments, and this was one of the governor's proposals. Section 46 basically extends the state premium subsidy program for COBRA to reflect federal changes. Section 47 makes some changes in the coordinated care delivery systems under the GAMC bill. It provides that contracts are in effect from June 1st until the effective date of the MA expansion for adults without children. It basically requires recipients to choose a coordinated care delivery system within 25 miles and limits the commissioner, when the commissioner assigns people to these entities, to this 25-mile criterion. And it clarifies some payment methods and financial responsibility for transfers from one hospital to another. Section 48 clarifies how the June quarterly payment is made for hospitals participating in the coordinated care delivery system. Section 49 deals with the GMC uncompensated care pool. It allows ambulance services to receive payments for certain types of transfers and extends the sunset of the pool until MA coverage is expanded for early expansion. Sections 50 to 54 make changes to the GMC bill related to effective dates and transfers. Section 55 specifies that all costs related to early expansion are paid from the Health Care Access Fund. Section 55 requires the commissioner to issue an RFP and accept bids for a fiscal and actuarial analysis of House File 135, which is the Minnesota Health Plan bill. Section 57 requires DHS, when they negotiate managed care contract rates, to reflect anticipated savings from the coverage of birth centers under MA. And Section 58 repeals provisions of law related to the GMC program, effective 30 days after federal approval of the MA expansion, or January 1st, 2011, and transfers unspent appropriations to the Health Care Access Fund. And that's the last section of Article 2.
Mr. Chair and members.
Mr. Chair, before you go to the next section.
Yeah, Representative Abler.
I have a few questions. I guess just first a comment. It looks like we're trying to do the expansion of the MA thing effective April 1st, even though the department says they can't do it then. Is that a practical position to take?
I've been on a number of phone calls with people in Washington, and the people in Washington don't know the answers yet. But it may be that there's retroactivity allowed. Right now, if somebody goes to a doc a couple of times and they're found out 3 months later that they're eligible for medical assistance, there's a three-month look-back for any expenses that that person has. And in other cases, you can even look back further. Whether that's going to be allowed in the new federal law, nobody knows. It might. So that's why we're putting that date in there.
Okay. I have a few other questions. On Section 18, we reduced the copays on the hospitals from, that's page 27, I think, from $6 to $3.50. How does that help us save money?
Mr. Representative Abler, that...
Mr. Chun.
...language is something suggested by the department as a federal compliance measure.
So we have to reduce that?
If we want to get the money.
Okay. And then I've a couple of questions. They're all pretty short. On Section 25, page 34, what's the increase in the 2% rate to manage and county-based? If it's part of the medical assistance early thing, just tell me that, then I don't have to ask questions. But is that something unique? In its own right.
Mr. Representative Abler, I believe this is tied to the medical assistance surcharge that's reimbursing them for part of, for the HMO surcharge.
Okay, that's fine. And then on page 36, section E, about this 15% for this whatever specific place, I don't know if that's regions or what, but what's that 15% about? Is that increase of 15%? Is that tied to something?
Mr. Rex of Abler, again, that's a provision that was suggested as part of the HMO surcharge. It's a, it increases the payment to a particular HMO.
Because they can't equal out exactly, is that part of it? And so you kind of like them the best. Okay. On page 40, section 34, and that 7%, is that also, there's a 7% increase in, is that the same kind of thing?
Mr. Director Abler, I guess that is sort of the way money is being used from, there's also in the bill a reduction in managed care payment rates. And this is one of the way that, that money is being used.
Well, those are all part of the HMO surcharge.
Mr. Director Abler, no, it's a separate provision that has the reduction in managed care payment rates.
Okay, well, then how did we pick this particular group to give 7% of an increase to? Is that maybe a, is that a policy decision?
That was a bill that I had that did that, and this relates to the fact that the HMOs, if we do the early expansion.
Oh, it's part of that. We have to raise the rate.
We will be paying them 20% more than they get. Right. Have been getting for GAMC.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I just have one more comment. That helps. I just there's lots of little pieces here, you know. And I am happy to see there's a few tweaks to the CCO, Coordinated Care Organization law, which I just want to remind people that we don't know what will be allowed at the end of the day about MA expansion, et cetera. And so maybe these can. It would be smart to kind of dual track some improvements to the CCO thing. If current law stays current law, you might wish we had some groups that could operate there. And so I'm willing to be part of that process to find some other language to make those things actually work. So that's, thank you. That's all.
If I could just say that with the bill we passed, the Commissioner of Human Services can assign anybody to any hospital that he chooses. So if any of these hospitals have chosen to be a CCDS, they have no idea the number of people that are going to be assigned to them. And that's why a lot of them have not agreed to be that. And so we have language earlier that says that it has to be within 25, the person has to live within 25 miles of that hospital. And the intent is to try to get more hospitals involved.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I'm commending you on your effort about that. So there's there's a lot at stake. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Other questions? Okay, let's go on to the next section then.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll be going through Article 3, the continuing care article. It starts on the bottom of page 55 of the delete all amendment, and section 1 modifies the parental fees for children receiving MA through the TEFRA option. Section 2 deals with MAEPD, and it removes an obsolete date. It increases the MAEPD premiums, and it requires the commissioner to notify enrollees annually beginning at least 24 months before a person's 65th birthday of the MA rules affecting income, assets, and treatment of a spouse's income and assets that will be applied upon reaching age 65. Sections 3 and 4 deal with the elderly waiver program, and it eliminates the automatic adjustment to the EW monthly case mix caps when there's an increase in the average statewide nursing facility payment rates. Article 5 deals with nursing facility rate reductions. It reduces nursing facility operating payment rates by 1% of the operating payment rate for fiscal year 2011, and then it puts the rates back to where they currently are in fiscal year 2012, and there's an error in the House research summary. It says that the reduction is 1.5%, and it should say 1%. Section 6 deals with ICFMR rate reductions. It's similar to the nursing facility rate reduction. It's a 1% payment rate reduction for fiscal year 2011, and then the rate is restored to the current rate in 2012. Section 7 deals with the PACE program. It removes some obsolete language, and it also removes language requiring grant amounts received for PACE to be deposited in a special revenue fund and appropriated to the commissioner to be used for actuarial and administrative costs. Section 8 relates to COLA compensation requirements, and this removes the requirement that certain providers who have received rate increases in state fiscal years 2008 and 2009 continue or retain employee compensation or wage-related increases that were required in law as a condition of receiving the rate increase. Section 9 provides for certain provider rate and grant reductions for continuing care providers, and this is a 1% rate reduction in 2011, and then rates are restored to the current rates in 2012. Section 10 deals with case management reform. It requires the Commissioner of Human Services to provide specific recommendations and language for proposed legislation to reform case management by February 1st of 2011.